Hey guys, welcome to the Mo Show podcast presented by Kaft. So just before we kick off, I want to let you know that Kaft recently launched their new app. I'm going to link it in the show notes below. Download it, give it a shot. It'll really help elevate your experience once you're within the district. Enjoy the show.
You got the turtle as well.
I know, and I was told that you, someone from your team told me that turtles are your favorite animals. When did all that start?
It's got to be years ago. I lived in the Bahamas, and I don't know. We have a house on a canal, and whenever a turtle would appear, it was like, you know, great excitement. So, you know, it became a routine. Every day we'd sit on the dock looking and waiting for the turtle to make an appearance. And they were amazing creatures because they come up, he'll take a breath, and then he'll disappear. And I'm like, where is he, you know? As a group, we had Team Turtle. That was before I even set foot in Saudi Arabia. So, you know, that's where it started. And obviously, it's taken on a new level here for obvious reasons.
It has. The marine life is rich here with turtles.
It is.
Do you get a chance to see them, like, on pretty much on every island?
Well, they do. They're everywhere. I mean, there's green turtles, there's hawksbill sea turtles. Mm-hmm. Although the hawksbills are a little bit rarer because they're critically endangered. I think there's 50 females in the lagoon, and it's something that we obviously monitor their movements. We tag them, just trying to understand their migration patterns. We went out of our way to protect their nesting habitats because there's some islands that are more important or more preferred, so, which is kind of, you know, something you learn as you start to study them a little bit more. And we don't know why that, you know, particular island in the southern part of our lagoon, which is called Al Wakadi, I think it's the approach from deep water. It allows them to be protected from their predators. It has the slope of the beach, the grain of the sand. We don't know. That's a favored nesting site, which is one of the islands we had targeted at the very beginning to develop. And we thought, wow, this is an amazing island. We're gonna really do something special here. And then we realized actually that this is a favored nesting site for the critically endangered hawksbill sea turtle. So we had a difficult choice to make. Do I develop it, but potentially accelerate the extinction of the species, or do I set it aside? And we chose the latter. I mean, you know, I think we brought a new approach to how we see development and its relationship with nature. And I think that's what we've tried to do to differentiate ourselves from the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A low-hanging fruit of a question in a very generic way. If I was to ask you, why do you do, John, what you do, would you have an answer for that?
I think you just have to look around. And there's nothing more satisfying, more fulfilling than actually seeing a place that you've imagined, you know, in your mind, that ends up on paper, that ends up in CGIs, and then trying to bring that vision to reality. I wouldn't like to describe it as like giving birth, but it is, right? You know, this is our latest child, and it's hugely, hugely rewarding. And I got great people around me that, you know, are all passionate and believe in the emotion that comes out as we give birth to the next installment of the Red Sea story. I think is what really just drives me and motivates me.
You know, it's a special year. I'll speak on behalf of Saudis, because 2024 is the first time we start feeling the assets being delivered of the vision. Going to one of the three or four resorts that are open on the water, or Southern Dunes, not too far away from here, or Desert Rock, where we are today, is the first time there's tangible Vision 2030 assets that we can feel. And me, as a Saudi citizen, Mr. John, that makes me really, really proud.
And look, and you know, I'm extremely proud of, you know, being able to deliver them as well as my team. You know, as I said, you know, us seeing these destinations come to life, actually delivering on the vision, which is hugely important. I was obviously, you know, His Royal Highness shared his vision with me many years ago now. And, you know, to be able to realize it and actually bring it to life is what we do, you know. And it's, you know, the pride we feel is when we see Saudis feel the pride in their own country. You know, because it's a symbolic step in terms of opening up the country, but it's the pride they have in sharing, you know, the beauty of their country, which is very well unknown outside of the Middle East. You know, and the more we open up the destination, the more we start to get people coming from around the world, the word will spread. Not only is it a beautiful place, but it has beautiful people that are, you know, generous. The hospitality comes naturally. It's not something we have to overly train You know, it's instinctive. It's in their culture, in your culture. And, you know, we want that to really bring these destinations to life, and it makes us all feel extraordinarily proud.
I always said you'll never find a course on hospitality in any of the Saudi schools. It really is ingrained in our blood.
No, and it's true. And I experienced it from the, you know, from the first time I visited to today. I feel warmed, welcomed, and, you know, just part of the Saudi family.
That's amazing to hear. Can you take me back to the day when you said, that is a project that I would like to head, and you took the job at Red Sea Global?
So they persuaded me to come, and it was around October of 2017. So the first time I visited. I arrive in Riyadh late at night, and the whole thing was kind of somewhat surreal. Anyway, they picked me up. They escorted me to the hotel. Fair enough. The following morning, they're saying, you need to be up at 8 o'clock. And it was late. It was 2 in the morning when we arrived by the time I got to the hotel. You know, we've got to go. There's a, you know, we're going to go by private jet. We're going to fly up to the Red Sea, and we're going to show you the destination. I'm going, okay, all right. You know, wake up leery-eyed in the morning. They take me to the airport, get on a plane. We fly up to the Al-Waj airport. Where they had helicopters waiting for us. And we get into a helicopter and they start touring me around. I was like, I had no idea. But when they took me to, when I arrived in Al-Waj and I saw the beautiful color of the water, the islands, it was like, wow, this is a very special place. Finished the tour, went back to Al-Waj. And then I was told, no, we have to get back into the helicopter because you have to go to the yacht. And I'm saying, what yacht? Well, His Royal Highness's yacht. So they back out to the helicopter, out onto the yacht. And then eventually they take me in to see His Royal Highness, which is, you know, pretty remarkable. You know, first time in the country and I'm meeting, you know, the future sovereign of the country. They take me in and he's totally relaxed, you know, no formality, sitting behind his desk. And he begins to share his vision of what he has in mind for the project and for Red Sea. At the end of that, and he made a big emphasis around the environment. That was an important thing for him, and you know, it sort of registered with me. And then to sort of finish it off, he says, "And I'd like you to lead it." I was like, "Okay, wow, what do you say to that?"
Only one thing.
And it wasn't the project, because the project wasn't defined at that point. It was a vision. But what ultimately convinced me were the people and the ability to be part of something much bigger than just purely developing another project, another tourism destination, or whatever it is. And it was to be part of a transformation of a country. I was mesmerized by His Royal Highness's vision, and I guess I can say to my surprise, he's gone above and beyond. It's gone faster and he's gone further than I could ever have imagined would be possible. And that's just a reflection of the man and his drive and determination to really transform the country.
Was there a specific challenge in putting all of this together that pushed you to your limits, would you say, that you felt most challenging?
Yeah, so I was employee 15 and, you know, really we had to start from scratch. We had to develop turn the vision into a master plan and you know, develop designs and so on. I learned as we started the process, His Royal Highness is very intimately involved in, you know, the design process, wanting to drive us to do things that have never been seen before. He wanted to create something that was very different to anything else in the world. So we weren't trying to copy the Maldives or the Seychelles or Dubai. You know, he wanted something that was quintessentially Saudi and something that was instantly recognizable as being the Red Sea. And so that was different. There are many challenges along the way. We built an organization. Today, our numbers exceed 9,000 employees. And that's because of the direction we chose to take. I wanted to do things differently in Saudi Arabia. The business case or the way things were done was typically to hire third parties. You'd bring in various consultants. I won't name them for obvious reasons, but that's the model. You outsource, you bring people in, they come, they do, and they leave. And what I didn't like about that was two things. One, this was a project that had a long life expectancy. We had a lot of projects to deliver over, you know, 10-year period or more. And it seemed to me a wasted opportunity not to invest in and creating an organization that would not only develop the Red Sea project, but ultimately be available to develop other projects in the kingdom regionally and one day globally. And so that was a change in direction, and it forced us to, I said, build the organization from scratch. So we went from a very small entity and we had to build everything. We had to get, you know, get our CR. We had to start getting our systems in place, hiring the people. But what I found is it was easy to bring people because people were excited about what we were doing. We were doing something that was pioneering in a place where it had never been done before. We were supported at the highest levels of the leadership of the country and the population as a whole, you know, pushing us to do better and to really use this as a platform to showcase Saudi Arabia in a totally different light. Challenges along the way, of course, COVID, you know, you throw a global pandemic in the middle of all of this. We managed through that process. We worked with our authorities, the Ministry of Health and others, to keep moving, making progress, albeit maybe not as fast as we would have liked, but we were able to keep progress going. And again, other challenges, what resonated in my mind was His Royal Highness's, you know, emphasis around the environment. You know, we want to make sure that this environment is available for future generations to enjoy, because we as humans have kind of taken advantage of our nature and our environments, and you know, now we're suffering the consequences of it. Here in Saudi Arabia, you had this pristine environment, rich in, you know, marine biodiversity, rich in natural beauty, and you know, pretty unusual in the world today. And so we wanted to do things differently. And so one of the biggest challenges is, how do we do that without ultimately damaging the very thing that I think will ultimately differentiate us?
So sustainability was on the top of the priority list from the early days. We need to preserve it so people have something to see when they do come visit.
Yes, it was. And I pivoted away from sustainability. So we had a mission statement, which was, you know, to, you know, develop this destination, setting new standards in sustainable development and putting Saudi Arabia on the global tourism map. The sustainability point, as I reflected on it, I came to the conclusion that it was no longer enough, right? Sustainability means maintaining the status quo, you know, preserving it, not damaging it. But if I go back to what I said at the beginning, where, you know, we've gone too far, we, you know, we've damaged our planet. So how do we regenerate it? How do we go beyond just simply maintaining it? And so we moved away from pure sustainability and now talk about regeneration. And it's a term that's now gaining traction. It's becoming more and more talked about as a goal rather than just simply sustainability. And that means the environment. It means taking care of people, your local communities, you know, upskilling your population. Because if you bring everybody along for the journey, you get much more buy-in, everybody believes in it, and it ultimately will lead to greater success.
As far as the local communities in the direct area of where we're at, do they contribute to what's happening over here by way of maybe their farms or their local businesses?
All of the above.
Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of them that are working directly for us, working for our many contractors. We have 85,000 construction workers across Red Sea and Amala. So lots of contractors, many of the contractors, over 70% of our contracts are awarded to Saudi companies. And I'm proud to say that a lot of local contractors, you know, small businesses that operate out of Al Waj or Umm Luj, you know, are securing business through the Red Sea. Again, because of the approach that we've taken, which is slightly different to the business as usual model of bringing in large main contractors, we've adopted a model where we're ultimately playing that role ourselves. And that means we're actually able to hire smaller and medium-sized enterprises, which then gives opportunities for our local contractors that might otherwise never get a look in. And I love building that supply chain. I love getting these smaller and medium-sized contractors to grow with us. They become long-standing partners. And, you know, it's a model I did in the UK of, you know, if you can imagine, you can do it there, I can certainly do it here. And these small contractors have that personal attention. It's, the owner is engaged. If we have an issue, he's responsive because the contract's important to him. And I'm pleased to see these companies grow. So that's one example. The farms is another area where we've got, you know, we created a co-op with 3,000 farms within our local area. Again, I was surprised by the sheer number. And what we tried to do with them is work with them to teach them how to farm sustainably, first and foremost, because it's important for us that we don't use a lot of chemicals and the like, that we manage water, you know, in an appropriate manner. But also said, okay, you need to be growing the following products. This is what we need as a destination. And we're getting thousands of people. I mean, our population alone today is, you know, around 15,000 of permanent. I mean, I'm talking about staff that are going to work at the destination, not counting the 85,000 construction workers. There's a lot of people to feed. So if you're producing the products that we consume, you've got a market. And that's what we've done. And you know, we're helping them, teach them how to farm sustainably, how to produce the right products that are going to be ultimately in demand, how to market themselves, because anything they produce in excess of what our requirements are, we're helping them actually get that product to market. And then there's you know, training, you know, creating opportunities for, you know, Saudis of all ages. You know, we have many programs from higher education to vocational training, all aimed at prioritizing where possible the local communities. Again, back to my earlier point, if we bring our local communities, if they benefit from what we're doing, they're going to be our huge asset for us, because people want, I mean, the luxury modern traveler wants authenticity. You know, they don't want to go to a destination that is totally operated by expats. The Saudis will bring this place to life. And again, one of our proudest moments is watching our Saudi guests interact with Saudi employees.
They love it.
They do.
When the guests see a fellow national on the other side, they applaud that.
They do. And again, it's a huge moment of pride both ways, both for the guest, but also for the employees who are proud to be, you know, fulfilling the vision.
I don't think many people know that 85,000 construction workers plus 15,000 staff, that's 100,000 people who work in the world of Red Sea Global. That's quite a takeaway from this. A lot of people to feed, as you said, going back to the whole farming and making sure that, you know, there's food reaching here in a sustainable way.
Yeah, it's important for us, right? If we can reduce food miles, we're reducing our carbon footprint. Mm. You know, and I think that's hugely important to our mission of, again, my commitment to regeneration, actually making the place better. If we can reduce food miles, we're achieving that. If we can create, you know, opportunities for our local communities to thrive, to be able to feed their families, to help educate their children. I'm going to tie one of these stories together, where I met a young man who, maybe not so young, maybe middle-aged, but he introduced himself as one of my small contractors that is now a big contractor. And I said, obviously I was interested, where are you working? He was working on the Ritz-Carlton Reserve project. He told me what he was doing. But here's the complete story. He said, and two of my sons are in your scholarship program at the University of Prince Meghrin, a 5-year degree program studying international hospitality management. So not only are we helping his family, and again, this is a multi-generational place where, you know, families are extended families, grandparents and children and grandchildren, et cetera. We were helping them improve their livelihoods, feed their families, educate the next generation, and giving them new career opportunities that previously wouldn't have existed. So, I mean, again, complete story, a fulfillment of what Vision 2030 is all about.
It's a real win all around when I hear such stories. Was the plan all along, John, to create something we've never seen before? Because if I can just highlight Shibara, for example. If an alien ship from the top looked down at it, they'll probably think, okay, that's been colonized already by some aliens, so let's go somewhere else. I don't think we've ever seen a hotel with rooms on water that looks like a UFO. Was the plan to do something we've never seen before?
It was. And it was, again, it was a direction from His Royal Highness. You know, we did design more conventional hotels, and he didn't like them, you know. And again, he kept emphasizing, I want something that has never been seen before, which is, if you think about it, very difficult,
very, right?
Extraordinarily difficult. We had some very creative, I mean, and we do a lot of design competitions. So, you know, the things we cast away are far greater than the ones that we ultimately land on, because it's a process we go through with His Royal Highness. And he's attracted to things that are, you know, never been seen before. I mean, Desert Rock is another, you know, manifestation of that. We tried to do something different. I underestimated how difficult it was. So I will admit that, because I think one of the other things we learned is, if I show His Royal Highness something and he likes it, he expects that I can deliver it. So this one I wasn't 100% convinced when I showed it to him, thinking, okay, well, you know, we'll be able to adapt it. And I thought it was going to be easier than in reality it was, because I looked at Alula and thought, okay, the Nabataeans built those tombs 2,000 years ago with their hands. How difficult can it be, right? Well, that mountain there is not sandstone like it is in Alula. This is hard, hard granite. And so when we tried to excavate into the rock to create the units and so on, we were breaking equipment. We could not, it was so hard, we could not actually, you know, carve into it.
So the tractors were breaking?
Yeah, yeah, the equipment that we were using, the excavators, et cetera, that were trying to carve into the stone, we couldn't do it. I mean, you can't quite see them at this time.
From the other side, we'll put some pictures up right now for those watching on YouTube. But that's a story. I mean, that must have been fun on some level.
It was. It was fun and daunting and stressful. But, you know, today, it's here. And you know, I just walked the corridor, which is a tunnel, which is it's beautiful. And we're already getting requests from, you know, companies to use this as a photo shoot location, to have fashion shows in the tunnel, because the tunnel is so special and so unique.
For those interested in bringing boats, or chartering boats for that matter, will yachting facilities be available on site?
Definitely. In fact, we've already had probably almost a dozen super yachts since a couple of weeks ago, since they launched Sindala. A lot of them have now come down and visit the Red Sea. We have mooring points right now, near the St. Regis and the Ritz-Carlton and Shea Bada. Next year, when we open up Shura Island, which is the main event for next year, we have a 118 berth marina that'll take super yachts above 100 meters. Amala has a big yacht club as well, a marina and a yacht club, 120 berths there, again, catering for super yachts. Look, there's a big emphasis to open up the Saudi Red Sea to yachts from the Mediterranean. So I guess the slogan now is Med to Red. You know, instead of the yachts in the Mediterranean going to the Caribbean in the winter months, now they come through the Suez Canal, and we open up the opportunities to go and explore Saudi Arabia. And the Saudi Arabia Red Sea, it's benign. You don't have hurricanes and, you know, massive storm events. We're building the infrastructure. We're trying to catch up, and that's what we're doing. And I think it's going to be a tremendous success. There's a new authority that's been created to help to navigate, pardon the pun, to create the navigational charts, to streamline the approvals process. It's a big emphasis. We're going to be, you know, building the new marine, the seafaring ways of the past, because Saudi was known for that. I mean, you know, this is, you know, the old traditional dhows. Actually, we had the Red Sea Cup a week or so ago, or 2 weeks ago, you know, where we refurbished 11 old boats and using, you know, the old original techniques, but training the youth of the Umluj area to do it as well, so that we retain that skill, because otherwise it's going to disappear. As the elders, you know, pass away, that tradition is going to be lost. So we were able to bring that back to life, which was a super, super exciting. You watch these guys racing, you know, and a few capsizes and so on, but it was a great deal of fun.
Shura Island to open in a year, if I'm not mistaken. Is that the focal point of the project?
Well, So the original concept, which is what we're delivering, was to have a so-called hub island. So a center of energy and activity. And so we chose an island that was relatively near shore. It's a couple of kilometers off the mainland. We were able to physically connect it by causeway and bridge. And we decided we would intervene on this island and build 11 hotels, a beautiful golf course, the big marina, and really to create a broader offering of products. But again, a center of gravity where you can support, you know, large offerings in F&B and retail and experiences. And then we had satellite resorts like Desert Rock, like Shea Bada, the Umahad Island resorts, so that we offered a variety of different experiences. Because today, luxury travel is not so much about opulence and you know, marble and stuff. Okay, yes, you do provide that, but ultimately it's about experiences. And if you can offer a diverse experience for one in one location, I think it becomes an attractive destination. Multi-generational families don't all want to do the same thing. So if you can offer different experiences in one location, one destination, that was the whole thesis behind the Red Sea and why that Shura Island has become so important to the overall, you know, activation of the entire destination.
some words recently were said by the Minister of Tourism on the subject of alcohol. And for the sake of, you know, putting the narrative out there, or let me take your perspective on it. Is this something that is currently being studied? What is your take on whether that's going to be something that's going to be offered at Red Sea or not?
Well, look, ultimately, we follow the law of the land. And as it stands right now, it's not available. And though I it will be important for some guests that desire that. And it may be a gating issue for them. But increasingly, people are moving away from alcohol from a health perspective. I think COVID was a key, you know, catalyst for people to say, oh, hang on a sec, you know, wealth and all the rest of that's not going to protect me from a pandemic. And people are becoming much more conscious. I think if I tell you that one of the fastest growing industries is non-alcoholic beverages, the amount of money, that industry is expected to be worth billions of dollars annually.
And non-existent 10 years ago.
And non-existent 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Although I just met our mixologist here who's been doing, I mean, a celebrity mixologist who's going to be making us drinks tonight, who has been doing it for 10 years. Somebody way ahead of his ahead of his time. But it is a trend that is happening. As I said, if you look at the amount of money that is being invested by the traditional beverage companies into non-alcoholic beverages, I think tells you, what's happening.
Non-alcoholic bars now exist in New York and London.
Yeah.
In what world would that have ever been a thing? The Red Sea Project is a key pillar under Vision 2030. How do you see the project contributing to the broader vision as far as what it can do to give back to the country economically?
So we're a big GDP contributor. So during construction, we're going to contribute hundreds of billions of SAR dollars into the overall economy. Because the construction spend, as I said, if 70% of it is going into local contractors, that spend is happening here. Even if it's going to foreign contractors, they're still engaging people locally, et cetera. In a steady state scenario, we'll be generating something in around 33 billion SAR a year into the country's economy. We're going to create 120,000 jobs between Red Sea and Amala combined. 60,000 are direct. 60,000 are induced and indirect jobs. So we're going to create jobs. We're going to create, economic activity. We're going to raise, obviously generate taxes through VAT and other means. So ultimately really fulfilling one of the key pillars of Vision 2030, which is to help diversify the economy, so that we have other sources of income for the country on a go forward basis as, the world decarbonizes and looks to move away from, oil and related products.
I loved reading the signs, not Red Sea Airport, Red Sea International Airport. How much are you banking on that airport becoming an integral part of the success?
Well, it's fundamental to our success. Airlift is critical to any destination succeeding. I tell the story of, and it was one of the things I said at the very beginning when I joined, people are cash rich, time poor. So if it's too difficult, if it takes too long, if it's too many connections, they're not going to come. So that's why we ultimately took the decision to build an airport to service the destination, to give us that very important link to the rest of the world. Otherwise, as I said, the most beautiful destinations will ultimately fail and fail spectacularly.
I got a glimpse of the airport today, and let me say it's a lot bigger than the pictures I see from your LinkedIn.
Okay.
Massive structure.
It is.
When is that coming online?
So we will finish construction of the main part of the terminal building at the end of the year. And by the time we go through the regulatory testing and so on, we expect to open it in February. We're already operating the airport, as you know. We operated the airport since September of last year. Today we have eight flights a week, soon to be 10 as we open up two flights to and from Dammam. We have four flights from Riyadh, two flights from Jeddah, and two flights from Dubai. So we're already operating internationally. And as we move through the rest of this year and move into next year, as we start to prepare for the opening of Shura, we'll bring on additional airlift, additional destinations to further complement the airlift. Because today, what we have serves our needs. We have a limited number of resorts open, though this will be the the fifth resort that we're going to open this year, which is, you know, pretty exciting for us. But it's still an overall key count and number of people that ultimately accommodates is relatively small. But next year is the main event as we prepare to open up Shura, which is, you know, another 11 resorts there, some 2,500 hotel rooms, which
more
is
than doubling what you have now.
It's more than doubling. It's like 500%. Five times what we've opened 5X. in terms of not in terms of numbers of hotels, but in terms of numbers of keys.
Keys.
Yeah. Because I think when we open this resort, we'll be at around 450, 500 keys. So we're adding almost 2,500 at Shura.
So 2025 is where the action really kicks.
That's, yes.
Not to put any pressure on
you. No, absolutely. So yeah, next year's the big event, because it's not just, if it was only Shura, that would be one thing, but we have another 8 resorts up at Amala. You know, another 1,200 to 1,400 keys between residential and hospitality keys. So next year is definitely an epic year for us. But this year has been particularly important for us, because the hardest thing is opening that first hotel. And the first hotel teaches you something. And for us, it's allowing us to stress test different parts of the operation, because we're not in a mature place, right? Everything that we've created, we've had to create ourselves.
Greenfield.
From airport to transportation, you name it, the supply chain. And so it would have been challenging, to say the least, if we opened everything up at one time. So the way things have worked out, by staggering the openings, and it's just staggering just because of the way the projects are completing, it allows us to learn, calibrate as we open. By the time we get to the big event next year, I think we'll have a fairly well-oiled machine. The airport will be fully, you know, firing on all cylinders. Our mobility, you know, both, because again, we do all mobility. It's not just cars and buses, it's planes. We have seaplane business. We have the marine transportation as well. We have vessels. We have I'm going to have my own Navy at some point, you know, to get people to and from the destinations and around the destination. So all of that are challenges that you can plan on paper. But ultimately, when you start operating it, then you start to realize, okay, well, that didn't work as we thought.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's the beauty of and the fun, right? Because we're learning as we go. Hopefully, we don't inconvenience our guests too much.
We were expecting, because we drove up from Jeddah yesterday, and we were expecting 5 hours to really feel like 5 hours. But it was a very pleasant drive, and I encourage people from Jeddah, which is a 5-6 million person city, to take the drive up.
Yeah.
As much as I loved, I was flying to Riyadh 6 months ago, and the first time on the screens in the airport in Jeddah, I saw Red Sea. I was like, wait one second. Are there flights now to Red Sea? I had to ask. And they said that literally it started a few months ago.
Yeah.
So that was nice to see.
Yeah,
nice.
But again, experience your country. It's such a beautiful, it's so interesting. It's got such diversity in terms of topography and terrain and the water and the islands. Yeah, explore it. Fantastic.
We didn't have much to drive to back in the day. Al-Ula, what you see now, 8 years ago, it's nothing.
Yeah.
It was absolutely nothing.
No, exactly.
And what RCU did there in the past 8 years, and now you look at it today, people from really all over the world are coming, as they are to Red Sea Global. So it's just an exciting time to be alive in Saudi Arabia. I say that a lot. Prices, John, the street, the people have spoken, that is it just ultra high net worth individuals that are going to be able to afford Red Sea, or is there going to be something for the middle to upper middle tier as well?
Absolutely. I think, and it's unfortunate the way the sequencing worked out, in that we've ended up with opening our more expensive units or more expensive resorts first. And that's just because we got slightly out of sync where we were expecting to be. And then there's a long story behind that, not totally relevant. But so it'll be fine. Next year when we open up Shura, our entry level is going to be a 4-star product. So it's very much targeted at the middle and upper mid incomes. So it's going to be much, much more accessible than it is today. And I think, you know, but having said that, you know, when you look at us in a global context and, you know, we have to compete on a global level. We're not expensive relative to the broader market. But it is expensive in the upper end of that scale right now. But as I said, next year, you know, the entry level will be much, much more affordable.
Sweet music to many people's ears. And I think it's important to diversify demographics, right?
Well, no, without a doubt. And look, it goes even beyond that, because Red Sea Global is now a multi-project developer. I mean, we're one of the biggest developers, certainly in the hospitality space globally. And yes, we're developing Red Sea and Amala, and yes, they are more at the middle to upper end, but we're going to be looking at more mid-market offerings as well and other projects that we're going to be developing down the coast of Saudi Arabia. So it's not forgotten. We can be very, very, very strategic in the way we approach future projects to make sure that, you know, you don't want to overly expose yourself to one segment of the market. I mean, because it's finite. There's a certain value and you know, quantum to that market. You know, the bigger market is obviously going to be in the mid market range, and that's where we're going to focus next.
His Royal Highness the Crown Prince is the chairman of Red Sea Global. What's it been like for you to work closely with him over the past, 7 years now?
Yeah, look, it's been amazing, right? From day one to where we are today. You know, he's passionate. He works incredibly hard, much harder than many of us. You know, we oftentimes spend, you know, we're up in the middle of the night waiting for a meeting, and it's one meeting after another meeting for him, and we're waiting to have that one meeting. Very involved in very, you know, keen to select the designs that really will help position Saudi Arabia in a totally different light to anything else seen anywhere else in the world. And I love that interaction. I love the support that he provides us. I mean, we do what we do because we have his support and the broader government support, because anywhere else in the world, we would not have accomplished what we've accomplished. Impossible, just because of bureaucracy and all the other, you know, things that go with it to make, you know, put obstacles in your path where, you know, the leadership and His Royal Highness in particular is paving the way for us to succeed. And you know, we're grateful for that support, because as I said, we wouldn't accomplish what we have without his support.
In such a short period of time, does he have an eye for all of this? Did he choose this specific part of Saudi Arabia for this project?
He did. Yeah. So the two main locations, Red Sea and Amala, he selected. And then we worked on developing the plans around his grand vision. But yeah, ultimately he knows, I think I know that he loves the Red Sea. I think he spends as much time as he can on the Red Sea. I mean, and we made the mistake of proposing an island one day where, you know, I hadn't seen it myself, but the team had looked at it, and we had some ideas on how we would develop it. And he said, "Nope, that's not a good island. The water quality is not good." And lo and behold, the water quality was not good.
That's some hands-on.
That is hands-on
experience.
He found these different locations. There's another location up north, you know, near Amala, that, you know, he spotted and is saying, "I want to develop that particular site." So, yeah, very much. He knows his coast. Mm. He knows his Red Sea. He knows the islands, and he's very He tells us where he thinks the next thing should be.
Makes your job easier.
It does. It does. Yeah, because it's a big coastline. It's 1,700 or more kilometers, or even more than that. And trying to find the next best place. But there's no doubt that the lagoon in the Red Sea is amongst the most beautiful archipelagos that I've ever seen. And I've seen some of the best in the world.
Of course, coming from the Bahamas, you've seen the best. Are you happy with what you have achieved so far? Looking around, fifth asset to be delivered. Are you happy?
I'm happy today. Tomorrow I won't be happy because we got more to deliver. But no, absolutely. I have a great team around me. You know, that are, again, we've built an organization that has culture that, you know, people are passionate and work together to ultimately succeed. And it comes back to my approach to doing this thing differently. We didn't hire external consultants to come and be the delivery and the developer. We're the developer. The people that are building this destination are our people. And it gives you a different emphasis and focus and on attention and detail and passion. And that's hard to replicate.
Absolutely. It becomes less transactional.
Yeah. Yeah. Because people buy in. They buy in and they believe. And again, I think one of the things that differentiates us from other projects is that approach where everybody is invested. They're invested. We're not building a project. We're building an organization. We're building, hopefully, a legacy for the country that, you know, all of the experiences that people are getting from doing this are kept in the company. So we iterate. The next generation of resort is better. This is the, I mean, as we've iterated, the first resort was, you know, again, a learning curve. The second resort got better, not only in operational terms, but the delivery, the execution, the quality, you know, the number of snags at completion versus the first acid versus the second acid versus the third. We're getting better and slicker at it. And that only happens because the same people are basically moving from one project to the next. And the lessons that we learned are being applied to the next destination and so on and so forth. So that's an important part of how and why we do what we do. It and do it differently to pretty much everybody else.
Before I left Jeddah, my mom was asking me, so where's your next shoot? I said, so there's this area called Red Sea, and it's about a 5-hour drive north of Jeddah. She's like, what are you shooting there? I said, I'm shooting an episode with the person who's heading it. The master plan is 50 resorts, and they've opened 5 so far. She's like, honestly, who are you shooting with and where are you going? Because they're not used to hearing such stories of such a scale of resorts being open in Saudi Arabia, at least not the older generation. It's all news to them.
Yeah, it's news to everybody. I mean, but especially the older generations who have lived through, you know, the last 40 or 50 years where not a lot was happening in that, certainly not in this space. It's a great revelation for them. My only sadness is that you know, in their youth they missed what's happening today. I hear that story often from the younger generations feeling sad about their parents not having experience, but they get to see it. So, and you know, this is an exciting time for everybody in Saudi Arabia, young and old.
Absolutely, my life's mission now is to bring my mom here in the next year or so to show her, look at some of the fruits of Vision 2030's labor.
Yeah,
what concerns you? What keeps you up at night?
What keeps me up at night? Again, the environment. You know, it's such a huge responsibility, you know, to be the custodian of this beautiful, precious place, you know, not wishing to do anything that would damage it. And you know, we've got a lot of people working in the destination and, you know, trying to make sure that people, you know, follow our procedures, that all the safeguards are taken. I think that's the one thing that I mean, most things don't keep me up at night, but that would do.
The sustainability element of it all, yeah.
Yeah, because you damage your environment, it's hard to repair it. I mean, Mother Nature is, you know, is very fragile.
Fun? I mean, besides swimming with turtles, maybe, what do you do for fun?
I fly, so I fly planes, which I enjoy. It's my escape, my ability to switch off from the day to day toils and just focus on what I have to do, which is great fun.
In Saudi, do you get a chance to do it in Saudi?
I do, yeah.
What kind of plane?
An Embraer, so a small jet.
And you've been doing that for years?
About 15 years.
I can't imagine getting on a plane unless I really have to, hence why we drove.
That's why you need to sit in the front. And when you get a totally different perspective when you sit in the front of a plane, you know, and it's peaceful, it's quiet, you know, apart from chatter on the radio. And it's just floating above the clouds. I mean, you know, flying in the morning as the sun's rising is a pretty special time. And also at night, because nighttime is, you know, especially at sunset, you know, the color starts to change, the sky starts to change color and you get those oranges and reds and it's pretty magical.
The views from up there are just uncanny.
Yeah.
Biggest goal right now for you in life? What's your biggest goal?
My biggest goal is to help deliver the vision. You know, my biggest goal is next year, you know, and then I'll set a new goal. And then I'll set a new goal after that. But next year is, you know, I think that's really what will put Saudi Arabia on the global tourism map. You know, we're taking those baby steps this year. Next year is the big thing. And that's the biggest goal.
And even if you go back 2, 3, 4 years ago, 2025 was the circled year for you?
More or less.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been some adjustments as to take account of capacity issues, supply chain issues post-COVID and so on. But fundamentally, we've stayed on track.
Okay, we're going to wrap up with a few, finish the sentences.
Oh.
I feel most alive when?
When I'm running along the beach, along the beautiful Red Sea coast, watching the sunrise. I mean, absolutely magical. I try to do that most days that I'm here on site.
Somebody tells me you're a morning person.
I am a morning person, definitely.
I want to be remembered for.
Wow.
Did someone share these questions with John? Probably not. What do you want to be remembered for?
I want to be remembered for really setting a new approach to development globally. I mean, I think what we're doing in Saudi Arabia is groundbreaking. It's leading a global transition towards our relationship with nature. You know, we have exploited our nature for far too long, and it's no longer sustainable. I mean, in that sense, we need to be doing things differently. We're lucky to have the support of the government, of His Royal Highness, and of the Public Investment Fund to be able to do things differently, and to really use Red Sea as a platform to showcase to the world that you can develop, you know, with nature rather than against nature, and, you know, uplifting your local communities. I think if I achieve that through our efforts here, I think that would be a great legacy to leave behind.
Yeah. I echo those words and honestly want to thank you so much for bringing a piece of magic and a bit of heaven, let's say, to Saudi. It's, you know, we look around at the resorts and we've never seen anything like it. I'll speak on my behalf. I've never seen anything like it in Saudi. So thank you. I see the efforts you put into it. And good luck with the rest of the year and maybe even more importantly, 2025.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this. And it's always great to talk about what we've done here at Red Sea.
Thank you so much, John.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
All right.